ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hope everybody is doing their best right now as we're going through this crazy time in our world. I'm Tony Bruschi, host of Real Ghost Stories Online. Wanted to invite you and let you know about our other brand new podcast that we just launched, Help Kill the Time for You. It's called The Dark Side of Wikipedia. It's about true crime and dark history. We dive into some of the strangest, most disturbed minds and experiences from our history and examine their story, their Wikipedia entry, and then discuss the cases, the individuals, and the psychology of the events as we go through each and every story. Some of our first episodes include Ed Gein, the BTK killer, the New London school explosion, Amityville murders, Richard Speck, Amelia Dyer, the General Slocum disaster, Jeffrey Dahmer, and more. New episodes every single week. Check out Dark Side of Wikipedia. Search it. Subscribe wherever you download podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and more. It's available now with new episodes every single week. Dark Side of Wikipedia. Search and subscribe today and stay safe out there. Obscene phone calls, strange letters, and taunting the innocent before he struck. These were some of the signs California residents had to become aware of in the late 70s and early 80s as they lived their lives feeling like sitting ducks, knowing a killer was on the loose.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is The Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Joseph James DeAngelo Jr. is an American serial killer, serial rapist, burglar, and former police officer who committed at least 13 murders, more than 50 rapes, and over 100 burglaries in California between 1974 and 1986. He was responsible for at least three crime sprees throughout California, each of which spawned a different nickname in the press before it became evident that they were committed by the same offender. He began as a burglar, the Vasilo Ransacker, before moving to the Sacramento area, where he was known as the East Area Rapist and was linked by modus operandi to additional attacks. In Contra Costa County, Stockton, and Modesto, D'Angelo committed serial murders in Southern California, where he was known as the Night Stalker, and later, the original Night Stalker, because serial killer Richard Ramirez also had been called the Night Stalker. He's believed to have taunted and threatened both victims and police in obscene phone calls and possibly written communications. During the decades-long investigation, several suspected individuals were cleared through DNA evidence, alibi, or other investigative methods. In 2001, after DNA testing indicated that the East Area Rapist and the original Night Stalker were the same person, the acronym ERON started to be used. The case was a factor in the establishment of California's DNA database, which collects DNA from all accused and convicted felons in California and has been called second only to Virginia's in effectiveness in solving cold cases. To heighten awareness of the case, crime writer Michelle McNamara coined the name Golden State Killer in early 2013. The Federal Bureau of Investigation and local law enforcement agencies held a news conference on June 15, 2016, to announce a renewed nationwide effort offering a $50,000 reward for his capture. On April 24, 2018, authorities charged 72-year-old D'Angelo with 8 counts of first-degree murder based upon DNA evidence. Investigators had identified members of D'Angelo's family through forensic genetic genealogy. This was also the first announcement connecting the Vasilo Ransacker crimes to D'Angelo. D'Angelo could not be charged with the 1970s rapes, but he was charged in August of 2018 with 13 related kidnapping and abduction attempts. On June 29, 2020, D'Angelo pled guilty to multiple counts of murder and kidnapping. As part of a plea bargain, D'Angelo also admitted to numerous crimes he had not been formally charged with, including rapes. The Golden State Killer, our topic today on the dark side of Wikipedia. My name's Tony Bruschi, Carol Hughes with us today. Please press subscribe, whatever platform you are listening to our program on. And how are you this fine day, Carol?
I'm good. And, you know, I'm listening to that and that intro, and I'm like, thank God for DNA testing.
Yeah. No shit.
You know, sons of bitches. Like, there's so many people, thank God, who have been caught because of DNA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we'll have many, many, many crimes, you know, even well into the future that are from our past that will continue to be solved. You know, years beyond that we'll ever even see, just because of that and ways people will be able to connect things. Should be very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And then some of them, like that guy, his crime spree was over such a long period of time.
Yeah.
That there are crimes that you'll never know he did.
There's probably crimes he doesn't even know he did.
Right?
You know, where when you get to have that many crimes that he committed like that, at some point you would have to think something would have to jog your memory. You know, and maybe that's where some of those people that do the like horrible sprees like this. I don't know if this guy did it, but where a lot of them will take a picture or something, and then you'll find the FBI or somebody will find, and he had a duffel bag of pictures, and you wonder, why the fuck would you take all these pictures? Oh, because he's doing it so frequently that he won't remember them. And that's super fucking disturbing right there.
Yeah, because we did that episode on BTK.
Yeah.
And I think that's what kind of kept him. I don't know. I've never been convinced he might not have traveled somewhere and committed some crimes we don't know about.
Yeah.
But he documented all of that. He kept all these little souvenirs.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of kept him from doing, killing as more people, because he had all that he could kind of relive it with. God, that's so disgusting, well, to even say that.
Well, you know, they call it trophies. And you know, animals do it, and you know, people that are doing that to people, I guess, sometimes do it too. But you know, I think that's part of what it is they get some sort of gratification from it, and then just looking at something that's associated with that moment in time gives them that gratification. Now, to the normal mind, you would have, you know, people as humans, we take trophies, but they're not usually of other humans' deaths. You know, it, quite often it's happy times, it's mementos from a great vacation or something. Those essentially are trophies that are designed to bring your memory back to a certain place in time, and you do it because it's gratifying, it's happy, it's uplifting to you. People that have disorders, whatever you want to call it, that they think that that's an okay thing to do and find gratification out of it, are doing the exact same thing, except their mind is so fucked that it's associating that with something so positive. And that's where you get.
I never thought of the comparison to like vacation pictures.
It's people. I mean, we take trophies of stuff. I mean, you know, we think trophies, we think like baseball player, but you know, everything that we keep around our house essentially is a trophy of some sort. It's not necessarily, don't think accomplishment, but it's just, you know, this is a piece of my life that means something to me, and this is why it's here. You know, there's usually a reason for almost everything.
Right.
To a Pepsi can, because I like Pepsi, to an old microphone, you know, whatever it may be, for each individual, they're things. And if killing is your thing, guess what? It's fucked up. But that's... Let's continue on with the life and times of the Golden State Killer. And I also will share a lovely story of me and Jennifer accidentally meeting family members of the Golden State Killer in our home, mind you.
What?
In our home, mind you, meeting them. I'll have the full story after sports. No. Here we go. Continuing on with the Golden State Killer story. D'Angelo was born on November 8, 1945, in Bath, New York, to Joseph James D'Angelo Sr., a U.S. Army sergeant, and Kathleen Louise DeGroat. She has two younger sisters and a younger brother. A relative reported that when D'Angelo was 9 or 10 years old, he witnessed his 7-year-old sister being raped by two airmen in a warehouse in West Germany, where the family was stationed at the time. Between 1959 and 1960, he attended Mills Junior High School in Rancho Cordova, California, beginning in 1961. He attended Folsom High School, from which he received a GED certificate in 1964. He played on the school's junior varsity baseball team. D'Angelo joined the U.S. Navy in September of 1964 and served for 22 months during the Vietnam War as a damage control man on the cruiser USS Canberra and USS Piedmont, beginning August 1968. D'Angelo attended Sierra College in Rockland, California. He graduated with an associate's degree in police science with honors. In May of 1970, D'Angelo became engaged to Bonnie Jean Cowell, a classmate at Sierra College, but she reportedly broke off the relationship. Investigators believe this might be connected to the offender saying, "I hate you, Bonnie," during one of the attacks. In 1971, he attended Sacramento State University, where he earned a bachelor's degree in criminal justice. He later took postgraduate courses and further police training at the College of Syracuse in Visalia, and then completed a 32-week police internship at the Roosevelt Police Department. From May 1973 to August 1976, he was in a burglary unit police officer in Exeter, a town of about 5,000 people near Visalia, having relocated from Citrus Heights. He then served in Auburn from August 1976 to July 1979 when he was arrested for shoplifting, a hammer, and dog repellent. He was sentenced to 6 months probation and fired that October. In November of 1973, he married Sharon Marie Huddle in Placer, now known as Loomis. In 1980, they purchased the house in Citrus Heights, where he was eventually arrested. Huddle became an attorney in 1982, and they had three daughters, two of whom were born in Sacramento and one in Los Angeles, before the couple separated in 1991. In July of 2018, Huddle filed for a divorce. They were divorced in 2019. His employment history in the 1980s is unknown. From 1990 until his retirement in 2017, he worked as a truck mechanic at a Save Mart supermarket distribution center in Roseville. He was arrested in 1996 over an incident at a gas station. The charge was dismissed. His brother-in-law said that D'Angelo casually brought up the East Area rapist in conversation around the time of the original crimes. Neighbors reported that D'Angelo frequently engaged in loud, profane outbursts. One neighbor reported that his family received a phone message from D'Angelo threatening to deliver a load of death because of their barking dog. He was living with a daughter and granddaughter at the time of his arrest. So that's where we are thus far. Our next chapter, we'll be jumping into his crimes and exactly what he did, but that's kind of the overview of his timeline.
Could you imagine being engaged to him at one point?
God.
Like, and then finding out? Or maybe, I don't know, maybe she never did find out.
I feel like had I held on to the friendships for what they've got, or those folks that I met in my house that one day, I could probably fill in the chapter of what his employment history was in the 90s or whatever was missing. I could probably find that out. I could probably get that information from the family.
So back up.
Oh, you want to know more about this story?
I'm a little intrigued, yes.
You're intrigued about me meeting the Golden State Killer's family in my living room.
Yeah, something about that. I'm interested.
I don't know. I'm kind of a personal kind of guy. I don't like to share those sort of things. So, you know, maybe.
Well, maybe make an exception.
Yeah, sure. What the hell? Why not?
You know, me talking here.
Let's say we're doing a podcast. Nobody's listening but you and me. So, in another city, and I won't say which because we've lived in many now. We had attempted to start going to a local church. And we're hoping maybe we can meet some folks in the area and such that, you know, same age, maybe, you know, have kids, you know, that sort of stuff, just relatable in life experience at that moment, or phases of life, whatever you call it. Anyway, that didn't happen. We went to this thing where they were putting together like groups of people to get together and socialize. And me and Jen, as you know, are not the greatest at socializing because, well, we call our farm Aspie Acres because we don't like socializing with people. And it's us on acreage. So that's that. But anyway, we were attempting to socialize because some people suggested we socialize. It's a bad idea. Anyway, hoping, hey, maybe they'll match us up with folks of like mind. But nope. We were at a table with some older folks and they were nice and all, but really, you know, not a lot that either of us could relate to. And you could just kind of tell both would try, but it wasn't a good match. But anyway, we were going to try and stick with it because more members may be coming to the next get together, which happened to be at our house. So I was trying to be good and, you know, like, we got some room, you know, you can come on over. I'm thinking maybe they somewhat vet the people, but they don't. So lots of people show up, some that really we're talking about going to some other churches that I've never heard of, and where they do things in the woods in the middle of the night. And there's a lot of chanting involved. I'm like, this is also not what I signed up for. But if that's your thing, that's cool. But this is probably the wrong group. I didn't say that out loud, though. And then the rest were, you know, just an interesting mix of folks. But this is where we get to the Golden State, if you will. This couple, and here's the scary part. Of all the people that were there, these people seem the most normal of all of them. Or, you know, the most like, you probably aren't going to kill me in the middle of the night and, you know, say weird things as you bark down the road or something. I don't know. It just, I didn't feel stable or I didn't feel that some of the folks were stable at this thing. Anyway, these folks seemed like a nice couple. We were talking, and within like 4 or 5 minutes, like, you know, and I don't remember the relation, if it was like brother-in-law or so-and-so's brother or something. It was something within in-law or literally like right there. If I remember right, it might have been someone's wife's, so it's like someone's sister's husband. I think that's what the relation, I could be wrong. I don't know. They're like, hey, you know, the Golden State Killer, that's so-and-so. It's your what? And then they said it again. And like, oh, and they were going to, this is like after all the, everything had come out, you know, everyone knew all the shit he did. And it was, you know, a done case. They were telling us that just a few days after the get together that the church suggested that we do, they were going to go out and they were going to go and try and, you know, connect to the Golden State Killer. And have a good relationship and teach him the way.
About Jesus?
The way. You know, and again, I've nothing. This is not anything against religion. I think it's fine. I think it's good in many ways. But people like the fucking Golden State Killer, I hope there's a fucking place in hell for them. I hope they're not saved. And I don't know. I don't know what it takes. And this is probably the good, quote unquote, Christian thing to do to save everybody. I couldn't do it to the Golden State fucking Killer. You know, no.
Wow.
I don't care how related you are to me. If you're the Golden State fucking Killer, no. So it was just one of the weirdest conversations I've ever had, where they were telling me, and I had been watching the news about I think like Rachel Maddow was probably on in the background talking about the Golden State Killer. And then they're telling me how they're going to go and try and save him. Okay. And again, not against people trying to help people do whatever, you know, that's all fine. This is specifically about the Golden State Killer. Me saying that's fucked up to do with the Golden State Killer. But I just kind of smiled and nodded.
If I had a family member who was, who had done that,
yeah.
Not even like what he had done. What he had done is so extreme.
Yeah.
But just like a family member who, say, was just like a serial killer
just
for a few years.
Just.
It sounded better.
Serial killer light, you know?
Yeah. You know. Just a few serial killings.
It's like Pepsi free. Yeah.
I don't think I could ever forgive that family person. Like,
no.
I think I'd have to. Sometimes I think it's okay to walk away and be healthy and say,
yeah,
you don't need a relationship.
Yeah, it is. And that should be encouraged.
What you did, and you live with that. I'm going this direction. Like, yeah, maybe I got to find Jesus. You're on your own.
Yeah, it's there's too much. Yeah, I mean, so again, it was the weirdest conversation. I just wanted to share that because it was a weird conversation. And again,
so
nothing,
weird.
No anti anything in religion there. I don't want to be taken that way in any way, shape or form. It was just they're going to do that for the Golden State Killer. And again, maybe that's what you're supposed to do. There's no way in hell I could do it. I just couldn't. So that's me. Maybe you're a better person than me. If you're thinking I'd do it, then you probably are, because I just can't. That's just, my mind will not let me. Let's continue on with the Golden State Killer story. DNA evidence linked D'Angelo to 8 murders. In Goleta, Ventura, Dana Point, and Irvine, 2 other murders in Goleta, lacking DNA evidence, were linked by modus operandi. He pled guilty to 3 other murders, 2 in Rancho Cordova and 1 in Visalia. D'Angelo also committed more than 50 known rapes in the California counties of Sacramento, Contra Costa, San Joaquin, Alameda, Santa Clara, Yolo, and was linked to hundreds of incidents of burglaries, thefts, vandalism, peeping, stalking, prowling, and more. Vasilla Ransacker. It was long suspected that the training ground of the criminal who became the East Area Rapist was in Vasilla, California. Although earlier Vasilla crimes, dating back as early as May 1973, and other sprees like the Cordova cat burglar or the Exeter ransacker, as well as burglaries that took place after a McGowan shooting, are now suspected to be linked as well. Over a period of 20 months, the ransacker is believed to have been responsible for one murder and around 120 burglaries. Most of the ransacker's activities involve breaking into houses, going through or vandalizing the owner's possessions, scattering women's underclothing, stealing coins and low-value or personal items, while often ignoring banknotes and other valuable items in plain sight. In late April 2018, the Visalia Chief of Police stated that while there is no DNA linking D'Angelo to the Central Valley cases, his department has other evidence that will play a role in the investigation, that he was confident that the Visalia ransacker was or has been captured. Though the status of the statutes of limitations for the burglaries have each expired, D'Angelo was formally charged on August 13, 2018, with first-degree murder of Claude Snelling in 1975. In 2020, D'Angelo pled guilty to the murder of Claude Snelling, confirming that he was the Visalia ransacker, East Area rapist. D'Angelo moved to Sacramento in 1976, where his crimes escalated from burglary to rape. The crimes initially centered on the then unincorporated areas of Carchemal, Citrus Heights, and Rancho Cordova, east of Sacramento. His initial modus operandi was to stalk middle-class neighborhoods at night in search of women who were alone in one-story homes, usually near a school, creek, trail, or other open space that would provide a quick escape. He was seen a number of times, but always successfully fled. On one occasion, he shot and seriously wounded a young pursuer. Most victims had seen or heard a prowler on their property before the attacks, and many had experienced break-ins. Police believe that the offender would conduct extensive reconnaissance in a targeted neighborhood, looking into windows and prowling in yards before selecting a home to attack. It is believed that he sometimes entered the homes of future victims to unlock windows, unload guns, and plant things for later use. He frequently telephoned future victims, sometimes for months in advance, to learn their daily routines. Although he originally targeted women alone in their homes or with children, D'Angelo eventually preferred attacking couples. His usual method was to break in through a window or sliding glass door and awaken the sleeping occupants with a flashlight, threatening them with a handgun. Victims were then bound, often with shoelaces, which he found or bought, blindfolded and gagged with towels, which he had ripped into strips. The female victim was usually forced to tie up her male companion before she was bound. The bindings were often so tight that the victim's hands were numb for hours after being untied. Separated the couple, often stacking dishes on the male's back and threatening to kill everyone in the house if he heard them rattle. He moved the woman to the living room and often raped her repeatedly, sometimes for several hours. D'Angelo sometimes spent hours in the home ransacking closets and drawers, eating food in the kitchen, drinking beer, raping the women again, or making additional threats. Victims sometimes thought he had left the house before he jumped from the darkness, typically stole items, often personal objects and items of little value, but occasionally cash and firearms. He then crept away, leaving victims uncertain if he had left. He was believed to escape on foot through a series of yards and then use a bicycle to go home or to a car, making extensive use of parks, schoolyards, creek beds, and other open spaces which kept him off the street. The rapist operated in Sacramento County from the first attacks in June of 1976 until May of 1977. After a three-month gap, he stuck in nearby San Joaquin County in September before returning to Sacramento for all but one of the next 10 attacks. The rapist attacked five times during the summer of 1978 in various counties before disappearing again for 3 months. Attacks then moved primarily to Contra Costa County in October and lasted until July of 1979. And then the murders came. A young Sacramento couple, Brian Maggiorio, a military policeman at Mather Air Force Base, and Katie Maiorgi, were walking their dog in the Rancho Cordova area on the night of Friday, February 2nd, 1978, near where five East Area rapist attacks had occurred. The Maggiores fled after a confrontation in the street, but were chased down and shot dead. Some investigators suspected that they had been murdered by the East Area rapist because of their proximity to the other attack's location, and a shoelace was found nearby. The FBI announced on June 15th of 2016 that it was confident that the East Area rapist murder the Madjuries. On June 29th, 2020, D'Angelo entered a plea of guilty to these murders. The original Night Stalker. Shortly after the rape committed on July 5th of 1979, D'Angelo moved to Southern California and began to kill his victims, first striking in Santa Barbara County in October. The attacks lasted until 1981, with a lone 1986 attack. Only the couple in the first attack survived, alerting neighbors and forcing the intruder to flee. The other victims were murdered by gunshot or bludgeon. Since D'Angelo was not linked to these crimes for decades, he was known as the Night Stalker in the area before being renamed the original Night Stalker after serial killer Richard Ramirez received the former nickname. On October 1st, an intruder broke and tied up a Goleta couple, alarmed by hearing him say, "I kill him," to himself. The man and woman tried to escape when he left the room and the woman screamed. Realizing that the alarm had been raised, the intruder fled on bicycle. A neighbor, who was an FBI agent, responded to the noise and pursued the perpetrator, who abandoned the bicycle and a knife and fled on foot through local backyards. The attack was later linked to an Offerman Manning murders by shoe prints and twine used to bind the victims. On December 30th, 44-year-old Robert Offerman and 35-year-old Deborah Alexandra Manning were found shot dead in Offerman's condominium in Goleta. Offerman's bindings were untied, indicating that he had lunged at the attacker. Neighbors had heard gunshots. Paw prints of a large dog were found at the scene, leading to speculation that the killer may have brought one with him. The killer also broke into the vacant adjoining residence and stole a bicycle, later found abandoned on a street north of the scene from a third residence in the complex. On March 13, 33-year-old Charlene Smith and 43-year-old Lyman Smith were found murdered in their Ventura home. Charlene Smith had been raped. A log from a wood pile on the side of the house was used to bludgeon the victims to death. Their wrists and ankles had been bound with drapery cord. An unusual Chinese knot, a diamond knot, was used on Charlene's wrists. The same knot was noted in the Sacramento East Area rapist attacks, at least one confirmed case of which was publicly known. The murderer was therefore briefly given the name Diamond Knot Killer. On August 19th, 24-year-old Keith Eli Harrington and 27-year-old Patrice Brios Harrington were found bludgeoned to death in their home in Cockles Drive in Dana's Point, Nigel Shores, a gated community. Patrice Harrington had also been raped. Although there was evidence that the Harrington's wrists and ankles were bound, no murder weapon was found at the scene. The Harringtons had been married for 3 months at the time of their deaths. Patrice was a nurse in Irvine, and Keith was a medical student at UC Irvine. Keith's brother, Bruce, later spent nearly $2 million supporting California Proposition 69, authorizing DNA collection from all California felons and certain other criminals. On February 6, 28-year-old Manuela Whittem was raped and murdered in her Irvine home. Although Whittem's body had signs of being tied before she was bludgeoned, no other murder weapons were found. The victim was married, her husband was away, hospitalized, and she was alone at the time of the attack. Whittem's television was found in the backyard, possibly the killer's attempt to make the crime appear to be a botched robbery. On July 27, 35-year-old Sherry Domingo and 27-year-old Gregory Sanchez became the original Night Stalker's 10th and 11th murder victims. Both were attacked in Domingo's residence on Toltec Way in Goleta, block south of Robert Offerman's condominium, where she was living temporarily. It was owned by a deceased relative and up for sale. The offender entered the house through a small bathroom window. Sanchez had not been tied and was shot, wounded in the cheek, before she was bludgeoned to death with a garden tool. Some believe that Sanchez may have realized he was dealing with the man responsible for the Offerman Manning murders and tried to tackle the killer rather than being tied up. Again, no neighbors responded to the gunshot. Sanchez's head was covered with clothes pulled from the closet. Domingo was raped and bludgeoned. Bruises on her wrists and ankles indicated she had been tied. Although the restraints are missing, a piece of shipping twine was found near the bed and fibers from an unknown source were scattered over her body. Authorities believe that the attacker may have worked as a painter or in a similar job at the Cal Rail Shopping Center. On May 4th, 18-year-old Janelle Lisa Cruz was found after she was raped and bludgeoned to death in her Irvine home. Her family was on vacation in Mexico at the time of the attack. A pipe wrench reported missing by Cruz's stepfather was thought to be the murder weapon. The Southern California murders were not initially thought to be connected by investigators in their respective jurisdictions. A Sacramento detective strongly believed that the East Area rapist was responsible for the Goleta attacks, but the Santa Barbara County Sheriff's Department attributed them to a local career criminal who was later murdered. Investigating the crimes not committed in Goleta caused local police to follow false leads related to men who were close to the female victims. One person later cleared was charged with two murders. The cases were linked almost entirely by DNA testing many years later. The suspect's profile, known physical characteristics, and these physical characteristics are considered factual based on crime scene evidence and nearly universal agreement by victims and law enforcement. A white male, about 5 feet 10 inches tall, slender, athletic build, size 9 to 9.5 shoe, type A blood, and his sperm does not contain blood-grouped antigens. Physically agile and capable of sprinting, bicycling, and scaling fences. Some probable characteristics. These are typical characteristics considered probable. Small percentage of victims describe the perpetrator as 18 to 25 years old when the rapes began in 1976. Authorities believed him to be between 60 to 75 in the years of 2018. According to the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department, microscopic paint chips were found at 3 crime scenes, 2 homicides, and a rape. This suggests that the Golden State Killer may have worked in construction, possibly using a paint spray gun. Well, sounds like he was a busy individual in the worst possible way.
That is just so horrific.
Yeah.
Because I kept thinking you were going to stop at some point. And it keeps going and going and going and going.
Yeah.
You know, and God, I can't even wrap my brain around that.
I can't, you know, when this was the first time I'm reading the Wikipedia entry, like, verbatim, and when it was going on television, they did not go into that gravity of detail, at least whatever I was watching did not. All I knew is that he was a horrible, horrible person, and when I had that conversation with those people, like, oh, okay, and, you know, it's like, okay, time to leave. Had I known, like, all of that, and that they had the gumption to be like, we're going to go over there next week and we're going to do that, I would have told them to get the fuck out of my house right now. Because, yeah. I'm sorry, some people are not fucking worth saving or doing anything with, or their fucking breath. You know, it's just...
We talked about that in the BTK episode.
Yeah.
About how in his mind, after all he had done, all he had to do was ask forgiveness. And he's good.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think and hope there has to be more to it than that. That you can't do what the Golden State Killer did or any of these people. You can't do that and just be like, you know, I'm going to accept Jesus Christ. And it's all good. I can't. That's really hard for me to comprehend.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a lot of people listening right now that are like, but that's what it says.
But I know, but I can't do it. And if you can, great. I can't. With some shit like this, no. I just don't believe that there's salvation for somebody who does this sort of shit. And I'm not trying to get religious-y, but anyway, it was brought up in the, I'm the one who brought up the story of how it was. And that's where I was just like, what the fuck? So,
right.
I mean,
like, when there's so many good things you could be doing and people you could really be helping.
Well, yeah.
Why him?
Why are you going and trying to help this? I mean, so you take a look. Okay. Number one, what I think of, if you're going to do something for somebody, you have to weigh like everything. And this, cause I weigh everything that I do. It's probably part of my Aspieism, but you have to like go and say, if I were them, I'd be thinking, okay, number one, I'm going across the fucking country for this person. What if I get hurt or killed, or my wife gets hurt or killed, or something happens and we need to be here or something? And what we were doing was going to try and talk to this guy. Is anything that could possibly happen more important than talking to that guy? And I would think that I would just go in error of not getting into a car accident. you know, just because why? Why even put yourself on the roadway for somebody like that? I mean, why even?
Why not?
I just don't get it.
Go to your local prison and try to help lots more people.
Yeah.
Like, why just pick out someone who committed such horrific crimes?
Yeah.
I don't know. I that's hard for me to. Because that's a lot of people. And then their families. Like, you think of all the people who are impacted by each one of those names that you just read.
I know. And it just goes on and on. And it is utterly, I mean, I just don't know how one does it. Or how you can move on to be okay with that person. I couldn't do it. Couldn't do it if it was my kid.
I don't even see how. If someone like him was to get some serious counseling,
there's
like
nothing.
They're talking with someone to work through their issues.
I don't get
how you could even help someone who's that far gone, let alone.
Why are we spending? It's like, why would we? To me, I just look at people who've done that sort of shit and they admit to it. It's one thing if people are trying to fight it, you gotta. But if you're saying, yeah, I did all this shit. Why are we wasting our breath? Why are we wasting a counselor's time who could be helping somebody with dealing with a rape? Why are we trying to help the rapist figure out their fucking life? Fuck that.
Yeah.
You know, why are we, why would you do that? It's not, when they're saying, I did it. I did it. I killed these people. I raped these people. Okay. Bye. You're going to go live in this hole now.
Exactly.
And then done.
It's not like the person who has always said, I didn't do it. And they were eventually exonerated.
No.
When it's someone who says, hey, I did it.
I want to be gone.
Yeah,
okay,
I did
great.
That.
And you know, it's like, well, don't give them the satisfaction of death. And I get that argument. But at the same point, it's like, why give them the satisfaction of living? Why give them the satisfaction of... Because some of these people are not going to feel what you and I feel. They're not going to feel the guilt. They're not going to feel anything. They're going to be like, I fucking did it, and they didn't kill me.
I don't think they can.
They can't,
no. I don't think they can.
And that's how that's how things like this can happen. Because it's, they don't think like that. They are missing something. And it truly comes down to a mental illness. But at some point, I am just not humane when people have done this sort of shit to other people. That's the sort of shit where it's like, I don't fucking care. Put it down. You know, if that person did that and says they did it, there's no saving. It just sucks, but goodbye. That's how I feel. Am I crazy?
No, I'm kind of like, you did that.
Yeah.
You were conscious of doing that. You know what you did and you have to live with it.
Yeah. There's just, I mean,
I think I've mentioned this before. I'm one of those people. I don't even know that I could. I hear people who do it. Like, then the person who murdered their loved one, they say, I forgive you. I don't know that I could even do that.
I couldn't do that.
I don't know.
And I'm the type of person who would be, here's what I do with people. I write people off when I've judged that they've made a poor decision towards someone else that doesn't even involve me. I'm just like, you did what? Okay, no, we can't be friends anymore. It's like, this is too crazy. So if, you know, I mean, that's a prime example was this story that I shared personally. You know, but I've done it my whole life when I view like somebody's like beating up on somebody else or being mean or whatever. You know, those are kind of childhood type things, but that's what I would do. If somebody's like my good friend and I see them picking on somebody else that...
Absolutely.
I'd be like, fuck off. Like, we are no longer friends either. But it's carried with me into adulthood 110%, which was never great in the working environment. We didn't have any real issues where we there when I worked with you, but I've had it in other places. But maybe with one couple, we should say. But that was about it.
You and I never did.
Never. No, you.
You and I have always been cool.
Yeah, you were like Aunt Carol from day one to me, and it was just like, I love this. This is great. So, no, the thing is, we've been having these like conversations. You know, we had lapsed in some years after I moved, but before that, it was every day for 10 years. So.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
So let's wrap up this episode and find out what ultimately happened here with the Golden State killer. On April 24th, 2018, Sacramento County Sheriff's deputies arrested Joseph James D'Angelo Jr. He was charged with 8 counts of first-degree murder with special circumstances. On May 10th, the Santa Barbara County District Attorney's Office charged D'Angelo with 4 additional counts of first-degree murder. Identification of D'Angelo had begun 4 months earlier when officials led by Detective Paul Holes and FBI lawyer Steve Kramer uploaded the killer's DNA profile from a Ventura County rape kit to the personal genomics website GEDmatch. The website identified 10 to 20 people who had the same great-great-great-grandparents as the Golden State Killer. A team of 5 investigators working with a genealogist, Barbara Ray Venter, used this list to construct a large family tree. From this tree, they established 2 suspects. One was ruled out by a relative's DNA test, leaving D'Angelo the main suspect. On April 18th, a DNA sample was collected from a door handle of D'Angelo's car, and later another sample was collected from a tissue found in D'Angelo's curbside garbage can. Both were matched to samples associated with Golden State Killer's crimes. After D'Angelo's arrest, some commentators have raised concerns about the ethics of the secondary use of personally identifiable information. D'Angelo offered up a confession of sorts after his arrest that cryptically referred to an inner personality named Jerry that had apparently forced him to commit the wave of crimes he ended abruptly in 1986. According to Sacramento County Prosecutor Theon Ho, D'Angelo said to himself while alone in a police interrogation room after his arrest in April of 2018, "I didn't have the strength to push him out. He made me. He went with me. It was like in my head. I mean, he's part of me. I didn't want to do those things. I pushed Jerry out and had a happy life. I did all those things. I destroyed all their lives, so now I've got to pay the price." D'Angelo cannot be charged with rapes or burglaries, and the statute of limitations has expired for those offenses. But he has been charged with 13 counts of murder and 13 counts of kidnapping. D'Angelo was arraigned in Sacramento on August 23, 2018. In November of 2018, prosecutors from 6 involved counties collectively estimated that the case could cost taxpayers $20 million in the last 10 years. And in April 10, 2019, court proceeding prosecutors announced that they would seek the death penalty, and the judge rules that cameras could be allowed inside the courtroom during the trial. On March 4th, 2020, D'Angelo offered to plead guilty if the death penalty was taken off the table, which was not accepted at the time. On June 29th, D'Angelo pled guilty to the 13 counts of first-degree murder and special circumstances, including murder committed during burglaries and rapes, as well as 13 counts of kidnapping, in a deal to avoid the death penalty. And then, COVID. And everything stopped. Yeah. There's someone who can just simply get it and be gone and save everybody the time and money and energy and everything.
I mean, it's already cost $20 million.
Yeah.
Like, just say, you know what? I'm like, at this point, can you just, I don't know. Can you just lock him up forever to save the families the stress of having to relive all that again?
Yeah. I mean, just think of it for a second, though. I know we're talking about California here, but they're California taxpayers. In any state, if this was happening around you, you would be the taxpayer on the end of this bill. And $20 million. That's a lot of money that state is putting towards dealing with that guy. Calculate all of the disaster that man then can be attributed to for the lives that those victims had to try and pick up and move on with afterwards, and everything that would have happened to all of those people. Think of, you know, things that they would have done to deal with it. You're talking addiction. You're talking probably suicide. You're talking probably horror, you know, relationships. You're probably talking abuse. You're probably just the way it spiders out. And then many, I'm sure, moved on as best they possibly could. But obviously, when you have that many people, you're talking of people who are really, you know, your odds are not good that everything's going to be A-okay. So take the damage that dehuman person thing did and spider out all those costs too. Why the fuck are we spending any money on this guy as a state?
And the one brother alone spent $2 million.
Yeah. It's insane. I don't get it. I don't get it.
You shouldn't have had to spend $2 million for that.
No. I mean, the more I do this show, I guess the more passionate I'm getting about the money that and efforts and resource. I think that's it more than anything else. Because the money, I'm like, holy shit, that's insane. But what you look at more is like you have all of these people, super intelligent people that are spending all these years of their life on this guy's shit that he already said he did and is ready to take whatever you throw at him. All of that energy and just all the shit we have going on in our world where people could use positive energy or people who could have a clue as to what they're doing to help get things done and accomplished and worked at. Why are we pushing our energy at shit like that? I guess the same could be said of me doing a podcast.
Families need resolution. Yeah. I get that.
Yeah. And they need it. Yeah. Cost? But it seems like, and if you're searching for the killer, that's one thing. But once he's there, he says he did it. Let's go to the death penalty now. Let's just kill him. He said he did it or whatever it is. If it's life imprisonment, whatever it is, he said he's did. We're done. Okay. Stop. But yeah, I mean, they certainly needed to do the investigating and figure it out. But once you got your guy, you got your guy.
Right.
Let's stop wasting money once the guy's there. It's that point. It's like I think they get off on all of the attention and money being spent on them. You know, there's probably some sort of joy that they get there, too. It's just it's fucked up. Anyway, well, that was a fun episode. Oh, the dark
side. Next week, can we do something like not dark side? Could we do something like just for a change the light side?
Pee-wee Herman.
A funny Wikipedia entry for you.
We're going to do Pee-wee Herman. The one part is the part where he goes to the porn place, and then the rest is good. He does another movie or two, and everybody loves him still. So I don't know what we got next week, but there you go. All right. If you like the show, please press subscribe on every platform. And as you listen to us on, let your friends know that we exist. We greatly appreciate it. A review on Apple Podcasts is like the ultimate. That helps us to grow in those rankings over there. So if you got a moment, please do so. Until next time, for Carol and all of us at the dark side of Wikipedia, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America.
America's social casino. Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
The new year brings new health goals and wealth goals. Protecting your identity is an important step. Your info is in endless places that could expose you to identity theft, leading to lost funds. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Resolve to make identity, health, and wealth part of your New Year's goals with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.